Hi, my name is Martijn Leijnweber from SBIC Noordwijk, and I'm here together with my co-host,
Maaike Smelter from NL Space Campus. Today's episode from Uncover Space offers updates from SBIC Noordwijk community, updates from the NL Space Campus community, and we introduce the guest, Pedro Lacerda, and he will discuss a new program, VLab, the ESA VLab, where research ideas can be brought to the commercial market. And we'll have a fun fact.
Looking forward to it. Welcome to Uncover Space. So, speaking about updates, this month's community update from SBIC Noordwijk. We got a lot to cover, so let's get started. First, we're happy to share that the community is growing with several new members joining us recently. It's great to see the community expanding with new entrepreneurs and companies. And for those interested in SBIC Noordwijk, there's an important deadline coming up. We're holding info sessions before to provide more details and help you decide if it's the right fit for you. And lastly, don't miss the chance to join the upcoming masterclass on sales strategy, an excellent opportunity to sharpen your skills.
Well, thank you, Martijn. We also have some nice updates for the NL Space Campus community. For example, the voucher arrangement. We have some subsidies and you can get more info from it on our website. Also, the Basecamp tender is closed, meaning we are actually going to build this year. And the next Network and Drinks in March is going to be at Z Conference on the 27th of March. So it's not going to be in SBIC, but it's going to be in Rotterdam. And the last update is that VLab project has launched, which also introduces our guest. Our guest is Pedro Lacerda. He is from the organization NL Space Campus and he works for the ESA VLab Netherlands. He will be discussing the ESA VLab, the questions, and his role in the matter that he's going to discuss is he is a scientific coordinator for the program. So welcome, Pedro.
Thank you.
Also, Pedro, welcome on behalf of me. We heard the ESA VLab Netherlands. We have a nice opening at the liftoff. But what is the ESA VLab Netherlands?
Okay, that's actually, the answer is complicated. It's simultaneously a hub and it's also a program. It is promoted by the European Space Agency and it has the goal of helping transform groundbreaking research into sustainable commercial solutions that can have a big impact in our lives. So it's trying to connect research that is being done at universities by really brilliant people that usually stays in academic publications and never is translated into valuable commercial applications and impactful solutions. So this is what the VLab is trying to do, is to try to connect the two. The program is going to be managed by NL Space Campus and SBIC Noordwijk, here in Noordwijk, right next to ESTEC. ESTEC is the part of the European Space Agency that deals with technology development. It's also part of a bigger network called ESA VLab Net, which is a network of similar places in different member states of the European Space Agency. So there's going to be one, ideally, eventually, one in each member state of the European Space Agency. And these will be connected and they will together contribute to the growing European network of these types of innovation hubs. The one in the Netherlands focuses mostly on Earth observation. So basically it's going to try to use space data. What types of space data do we use? Data that comes from space infrastructure. Earth observation, we know what that is, pictures of satellites taken of the Earth. Geolocation, so that's things that we can use in our mobile phone to know where we are. And laser satellite communication. That's a type of communication that does not rely on cables. We can talk via satellite. It's very robust, very secure, and it can have very good applications. So those are the three main areas we're going to focus on here in the VLab Netherlands. This is part of the ESA's commercialization effort to try to build a sustainable space economy in Europe, but the Netherlands is going to do our part with the EasyFillUp Netherlands. So it's a big answer because it's a complicated thing.
And can you also explain, I know there are different locations for the PhilLab, but why in the Netherlands and why not somewhere else?
Well, the Netherlands has a very strong research expertise in the areas that we've decided to focus our PhilLab on. So we have universities that are very strong at using data from satellites, at working with laser satellite communications, and working with geolocation information. So the juice where the ideas come from, the Netherlands are strong at that. So we want to take advantage of that. On the other hand, we have startups. You know, Dutch people are very entrepreneurial. So there's startups here that want to innovate using space data. So there's opportunity for the ideas to be converted into startups and new entrepreneurship. We also have a very strong industry, space industry based in the Netherlands, and those will be very happy to get breakthrough research converted into ideas that they can use in their business. And a very, you know, one thing that is kind of obvious is we're right next door to the European Space Agency, ESTEC, the technological part of ESA, right here next door. So it's a perfect place to have an institute, to have a PhilLab in the Netherlands. So those are the three main reasons why there's a PhilLab in the Netherlands, yeah.
Thank you. So can you maybe name an example? You say there's a lot of entrepreneurial spirit, a lot of startups, a lot of space data already implemented in the Netherlands. Can you name an example of one of those initiatives?
Well, okay. It's hard. I always struggle a bit. I'm the scientific coordinator. I come from the science side. I would be very happy to discuss all sorts of ideas that are being discussed. But some of these, you know, some companies want to have a little bit of secrecy about what they're going to do. But I can give a general example. Here at ESBIC, there's startups, lots of startups come here and incubate and get boosted. And what they are trying to do is to use space data to solve important problems on Earth. And generally, the most common applications come from satellites take pictures as you would take with your phone, but it's from a satellite. So you see in those pictures what you would see in a picture taken with a camera. But there's more information that you can extract from the ground with satellites using instruments that observe things we can't see with our eyes, like light polarization, for example. And if you use light polarization techniques, you could measure the health, for example, and the biodiversity of plants on the surface. And you can see that could be very important maybe to improve our agricultural processes or to improve, for example, the government wanting to decide, do I need to give subsidies to these farmers because their biodiversity is low and we need to help them with that. So that's an example of how you could innovate using space data, looking at things that maybe people don't traditionally use satellites for, but that scientists are using just because they're curious about it. And you can convert it into something actually useful.
Thanks. You already highlighted a little bit, but for whom is the ESA PhilLab Netherlands interested?
Yeah, there's two ways. One is, it's who is it interesting for on the input? So who can come in and try to do something at ESA PhilLab, develop something, and then you've got the output. Who is the ESA PhilLab Netherlands good for, the output that comes out of it? So on the input side, you've got academia and research. As I was saying, that, you know, there's researchers that are developing cool ideas just because they're curious, but some of them just stay in their books and they just want to publish their results. But others think, yeah, this thing I've came up with could be very useful, and they want to see it turned into something useful. And so they can come to the ESA PhilLab and say, look, I've got this great idea, and this could bring all these advantages to the economy or to our lives. So it's good for them, because there's a way for them now to get funding to transform their research into an application. It's also important, it's also useful for industry players, you know, industry players do their own research and development, R&D, but now they have a tool to be connected to research, which gives them an input to new ideas, and they both could come together and apply to do a project here. It's also useful for startups and entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs, if they're really cool, now this is something I don't know much about, but I can just guess that if they're really strong and good, they usually want to solve a problem. They start from seeing something that could be solved, and they're trying to find solutions. And sometimes they don't have the technical solution. They know there must be a way to do this. By at the Phi Lab, we can try to team them up with researchers that say, oh, I know how to solve that problem you have, and they come in as a team. So there's these three types of people that can come together, form a consortium, and apply. That's a kind of a perfect project, you know, that connects these three things. Then on the output, the projects that come out, you know, what comes out of one of these projects will benefit, as I was saying earlier, government and policymakers. It helps them decide who needs the subsidies, monitor who is following certain rules that could be monitored using space data. And it's also very useful for another thing that we also do here at SBIC, which is technology transfer specialists. So people that are constantly looking at different ways to apply technology and knowledge into an area that you wouldn't expect a result to be positive, but sometimes it is. And our technology transfer efforts here at SBIC will be constantly looking at these Phi Lab projects and seeing, oh, okay, you're developing this for this application, but I think you could also apply it somewhere else. And so that's it. You've got people that this is useful for because it's going to enable them to do something, but you also have people that are going to gain from the results of the projects that come out at the end of the incubation in the Phi Lab.
So can you specify who's actually going to gain?
We all are. Well, for example, suppose that government needs to monitor if someone is not polluting the ground with nitrogen. And now maybe they need to send a team of people to every farm in the Netherlands to check how much nitrogen is being emitted. Suppose we develop a really useful way that you just press a button and in the dashboard of some policymaker, oh, they see a whole map of the Netherlands and they immediately see, oh, this is red, this is green, these are doing well, these are not doing well. So that there's a benefit there in time and money and effort that people put into doing these types of things. You know, you could say in a very simple way, it's before you went on holiday, you had to carry this map. And remember these maps in the old days made of paper that you actually had to fold them. And once you open them, you don't know how to fold them anymore. It's, yes. Oh, it's a lot of work. And someone's trying to drive and the other one's opening the map and the map is covering part of the windshield. And I mean, nowadays, you just ask the thing on the middle of your car, hey, give me the way to so-so-so. And because of satellite space data, we know exactly where we are. And we see in the dashboard of our car where if you need to turn left or right. And you've got this voice saying, turn left, you know. So that's it. You just go from a complicated, old-fashioned solution that's a lot of bother to a really easy one. So that's why I say everybody can ultimately benefit depending on the creativity of the projects.
And then you lose the satellite navigation and then you're lost.
And then, yeah, that's true. My father is always saying, no, I need to keep knowing how to do things as in the old days, if there's no electricity and if there's no internet, because one day those things will stop and then nobody knows how to live anymore. And I listen to him and I say, yeah, things are not going to stop. We'll be okay.
Can you explain how this program is different from other programs? And also wondering, isn't some of these things already happening? Aren't there already products for these ideas?
Well, yes and no. Martijn is here hosting this, and he's been managing the ESA Business Incubation Center for many years. And the ESA, some people wonder what is the difference, for example, between the ESA Business Incubation Center and the ESA Phi Lab. And the main difference is that the Business Incubation Center aims at these entrepreneurs that have an idea and they have a bit of technical knowledge and they think, okay, I can start a company, a small company that will attack a problem. And so it's the idea is to help form a new business, a new company. But it usually starts with the entrepreneur. As I was saying, this new lab wants to do is to go dig for ideas that are hidden in universities and researchers, which are usually, they've been developed in a sort of an abstract environment. People are just doing this for curiosity. And what we want to help is dig these good ideas from research and bring them to the commercial world. So it goes a little bit a step earlier in the development of technologies. It tries to go get ideas when they're maybe they're slightly initially further away from commercialization, and we want to force the people that come to the PhilHub to think about it in commercial terms. So people that apply, I think some of them will not be initially very market-driven, but we're going to push them to turn their idea into a commercial solution. Whereas the Isabik, you get people that are already super motivated to start a business, I think. That's one difference. So if you're an academic or a researcher and you have a good idea that you think could become a business or a solution, you should go to PhilHub. But yeah, there will be some overlap. And we also think about ways to connect the two programs. For example, if a team of three researchers apply and come to the PhilHub and develop their idea, but then when they get to the end of it, it's actually, okay, here's a solution or a product that could be sold. But you know what? We still want to stay in research and we don't want to do that. But if during their incubation we connected them to an entrepreneur that says, oh, I really like that thing you're developing and I can turn it into a business, you know, this could, at the two, that this can then go into an Isabik application where this entrepreneur takes this idea that was further developed in the PhilHub and now could be commercially used, and it could, one could feed the other. And you could also think of reverse scenarios. I think there's a lot of really cool possibilities.
Thank you, Pedro. But before we go to the end, we have the fun fact from Maaike. Maaike, I'm curious, what is the fun fact for this episode?
Yes, Martijn, thank you. So we decided to have every podcast one fun fact.
Are the moon boots coming from the moon?
Was the microwave used first in space?
We all now know. Let's hear for Maaike's fun fact. Maaike's
fun. This episode, I would like to start with the fun fact that the countdown, we all know, the launch countdown 10, 9, 8, happening at a rocket launch, didn't originate from the space industry, actually. Countdowns actually weren't even universal until very long ago. So I'd like to explain a little bit. Where does it actually come from? For example, in 1975, in the Soviet Union, the liftoff of one of their rockets, and this came from the Russian control center, was broadcasted live through the radio, and they heard 30 seconds to the launch command has been given, the onboard telemetry registry equipment has been turned on. That's a lot of complicated words. Also, the onboard control systems have been turned on, ignition, the engines are powered up, the launch, the booster is off. There is no countdown at all. So where does it actually come from? In 1929, an Austrian filmmaker named Fritz Lang recruited a German spaceflight pioneer to recommend ways to add realism to his silent science fiction movie about a trip to the moon. A countdown was inserted to increase drama. After that, German rocket engineers actually began including countdowns in their rocket tests. So only 40 years after the silent black and white version of the humans flying to the moon, the countdown became a reality in the United States because it was made by the same German spaceflight pioneers that actually supported the movie. So countdowns didn't used to be universal, but nowadays it is a complete part of our Western culture and it precedes every rocket launch.
Cool. That's a nice thing. I didn't know.
I can see your face lining up being so surprised.
Yes, I'm definitely am. Pedro, did you know that?
No, I had no idea. But it makes a lot of sense that the Russians would have given you way too much detail. And then this guy making a movie thought, let's make it simpler and just numbers. Everybody understands 10, 9, 8. Nobody wants to know designation. Yeah. No, I like it. It's a really, really cool fact. Yeah.
And would you like to know more what have been discussed during this episode? Take a look at the show notes where we're going to provide you the links of all the topics which we have discussed.
Well, thank you. And for the next episode, I would like to introduce our next guest. His name is Philip Schoonejans. And he is a former ESA project manager for exploration, and he worked on missions to ISS, Moon, and Mars. And we'll talk about research and space exploration. Please like and review our podcast, which helps to give it more exposure. And if you have any tips, any ideas, if you want your updates shared to the community, please send us an email to the email address also shared in the show notes. Then we were super excited to do this first episode.
Thank you for listening to Uncover Space.